Hi, I'm Steve Mabb, Chair of the Australian Shareholders Association, and we're proud to be hosting the 2024 Investor Conference in Melbourne from the 19th to the 21st of May. And we're stoked that Phil, the host of this podcast, is going to be our special guest MC. If you haven't heard much about the ASA conference, it's a flagship event that attracts around 300 investors and industry professionals, including the chair of National Australia Bank this year, the chair of AGL. We have Dr. Sam Hupert, the founder and CEO of ProMedicus, and we've also got Richard White, the founder and CEO of WiseTech, coming along with many others. For a limited time, new members can enjoy special pricing on registration for the upcoming conference, along with a complimentary 12-month digital membership with the ASA. That's 2-day conference registration plus 1-year ASA membership for $499, a saving of $150. Simply search for Australian Shareholders Conference Register, click on 2-day conference non-member, enter the discount code MEM, as in member, 499, the numbers 499, so that's MEM499 to claim your special offer. Come along and meet me and Phil at the conference. We look forward to seeing you there. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of Shares for Beginners.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
One of the first lessons I learned when I began this podcast, that it was no longer necessary to just look at individual shares and companies. ETFs, or exchange-traded funds, provide a vast smorgasbord of investment options, but the number of choices can also create confusion. So today we welcome Kanish Chugh from ETF Securities to explain ETFs to us.
No, cheers. Thanks, Phil.
Kanish, before entering the investment management industry, you worked in the financial media industry at both the Fin Review and Insto Publications.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was a good entrance into the market. Actually, when I finished university, I finished around the time of the GFC.
Yeah.
So it was a tricky time to find a job. So it was a matter of, you know, finding something linked mm-hmm. to the financial services area. And that's sort of what I was able to do. So it was a good experience seeing from the other side.
Yeah.
But that was one of the best things for me, was actually trying to work out where in finance I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, specifically within asset management.
Yeah. So why asset management? And what is that asset management?
Yes, yeah, so asset management essentially is, you know, when you consider your anyone's super funds,
mm-hmm.
You know, that is the management of those funds.
Yeah,
you know, that is asset management.
Mm-hmm.
So there are asset management companies. So their basically main role is to manage funds on behalf of investors.
Mm-hmm.
So someone like a Fidelity, for mm-hmm. example. Fidelity, they have a very successful active Australian equity fund. Now, they've got a portfolio manager, they've got a team of analysts, and that's what their role is, you know, making sure that they make the best decisions from their perspective to achieve the outcome that they're targeting.
So one of the terms you hear coming up is active and passive.
Yes.
What's active mean?
Yeah, so active basically means that there's someone making a decision. Whether they're using bottom-up research, so basically they're looking at, you know, all the companies on the ground and they're really trying to identify trends, and from that they're driving that research up to make a particular company decision. You know, they're making some form of active decision around the portfolio. So when I talk about an active Australian equity manager, what they're doing is they're saying, we're going to build a portfolio of 25 to 30 stocks.
Australian equities, shares.
Shares equals equities equals stocks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really what, and I was speaking with friends on the weekend, exactly the same thing I was having to explain to them. You know, what is an equity? It's a share.
Yeah.
And so that's what an active manager is doing. They're sitting there going, okay, we're going to create a portfolio of stocks or shares, but we're going to choose, you know, based on what their belief is.
And those managers, they've got all sorts of strategies, don't they? There's a million strategies.
There's so many different types of strategies. You know, you've got strategies from being, you know, sometimes we use the word fundamental, mm-hmm. and what that means is bottom-up research. So they're fundamentally doing the research on the stocks, and that is what is driving their decision around to buy one stock over another.
And so fundamental is when they're looking at the actual numbers of the company.
They're doing the guts of the research. They're going out to, you know, to the mines and actually doing site visits of, you know, BHP and, you know, Newcrest and actually seeing with their own eyes what's happening and you know, sitting with the management and trying to understand what their philosophy is and what their strategy is for the growth. And I guess that's the difference where you've got passive. So what is passive investing? Now, passive is, you know, it was started by Vanguard over 60 years ago. And it was the idea, and it's sort of the Warren Buffett style sort of theory, which is why buy individual stocks when you can just buy the actual market? So passive investing really is, takes that decision-making out. So there is no portfolio manager sitting there going, I will buy BHP over Rio, or we should buy CBA over ANZ. What passive investing is saying is, you buy a benchmark. That is what passive investing is. It gives investors the ability to just say, I want the market, or I want that index exposure. And that started to evolve. And that's where ETFs have really come into its fore, is the evolution of indexing. And therefore, we've seen this big growth over the past 20 years globally in exchange-traded funds.
Okay, tell us about an exchange-traded fund.
An exchange is your stock exchange. So if you flip the words in reverse, it's a fund that is traded on exchange. Simple as that. So it's open-ended. Now, what does that mean? It means that I can continue to buy units. There's no sort of limitations around how big the fund can get. So therefore, what it means is investors can then buy and sell an ETF as quickly and as easily as they do a normal share. So if they have a Telstra share, if they have a Commonwealth Bank share, if they have an ANZ share, they buy and sell that via, you know, the CommSec accounts or via their stockbroker or financial planner, for example. An ETF all have a code attached to them. You know, an example is we've launched a India equity ETF and the code is NDIA. And so simply a person can put in NDIA and they can look and say, okay, well, I can buy and sell that as I do a normal share. You know, majority of ETFs in Australia are physically backed, so they hold the underlying equities or bonds or commodities or currencies. So they're very simple, they're very transparent, and all the idea is it allows the investor to buy and sell that as they do a normal share.
And it's got one other big advantage as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, I guess, well, there's a few big advantages. One is cost, because we're tracking an index, we're not making any decisions. We're simply saying, you're buying the index. So an example there is iShares. Now, iShares is a big global ETF provider. You know, I think they're the second largest in the world. They've got a S&P 500 ETF. Now, what is the S&P 500? That's the US index. So that's the largest 500 stocks on the US market by size. They've been able to offer that ETF for investors for 0.04% management fee. Now,
That's so cheap.
That is so close to zero. It's unbelievable. But, you know, it's so cheap. You know, we look at our infrastructure ETF, our global infrastructure ETF that we have, and the ticker, the ASX code or the ticker is the other word that we use, is CORE, C-O-R-E. And that is 0.45%. So 45 basis points, 0.45%. Now, if I looked at an active infrastructure fund, you're paying 1% plus.
Kanish, are there any risks involved in buying ETFs?
Look, I think there are risks with any investment. So whether it's, you know, the risk of the particular product, you know, investors need to be aware of what they're buying. So for investors, they really need to come back to, what am I actually investing in? So I sort of, and I get laughed at, but I sort of say, look under the bonnet, to really lift the bonnet up and understand an ETF is going to track an index, but what is that index? Now, an example there is European equity ETFs. So I want Europe share exposure, but how do I get it? Okay, let me look at the ETFs that are available. Now, there are about five ETFs that do that. They offer some form of European equity exposure, but by the way, they all offer a different type of exposure. So you've got some there that offer broad Europe. So they include the UK, they include Switzerland. You've got one there that offers really broad Europe in terms of 1,600 stocks, and one that's really concentrated, about 350 stocks. And then you've got, we've got a product in a European, the Euro Stoxx 50 index. So that's the main index for Europe. It's, the code is ESTX, and that is no UK exposure. So that's the only ETF on the market that has no UK exposure. So with Brexit happening, if you think, okay, well, what should I do? I don't want that, you know, currency exposure. I don't want the UK market. Let me look at that. Or if an investor says, well, I want some UK exposure, well, what products are available? So that's just in European equities. And so that's the key thing there, is investors for ETFs really need to lift the bonnet up and understand what's underlying. And, you know, always speak to the fund managers. So speak to the ETF providers, whoever they may be. They're happy. There's a lot of resources available to them. And I think the problem is there's so much resource and content that investors can look at. So sometimes the easiest thing is pick up the phone and actually speak to one of the team. You know, we've got retail investors that will call us up and just ask us, look, I need to understand, what is this, you know, robotics and automation ETF that you've got? Tell me a bit more about it. Or your physical gold ETF, is it actually physically backed? Is it not? Like, what? Just tell me more about it. And obviously, we will try and help investors as much as possible. Speak to a financial professional is always a good thing. You know, try to get some insight from them as well.
I think that's one of the things that ETFs originally, or when you start thinking about ETFs, you think, oh, this is very easy. I don't have to worry and think about individual stocks anymore. But then, of course, there's so many different kinds of products and so many different ETFs investing in different sectors and different parts of the world that it can become confusing as well. But I first came across you via Chris, your CEO, at the ASX Investor Day, and he gave a great presentation, and the it was about robotics and artificial intelligence, his presentation. That was one of the most exciting things, because you realise that in Australia, you're not, there's a whole range of industries that are not represented.
Yeah, so I think that's a key point around ETFs, is the evolution of ETFs has meant that, so 16 years ago, when ETFs were launched in Australia for the first time, it was very simply, it was market trackers. So I'm going to buy the S&P 500, or we launched the first gold ETF around the world. So I just want gold exposure, so physical gold. So gold price moves up, that's what I get. But then you start to see the evolution of indexing, the evolution of ETFs. And what that has meant is, you now, ETFs gives you the ability to really drill down to a sector or a theme or a region that previously, for investors here in Australia, they couldn't do. So at ETF Securities, our big, you know, mantra is providing intelligent alternatives. So what we want to do is give clients the ability to say, if I want to take that thematic exposure, I want to drill down into those areas, I can do that now. So we launched Robo, which is the ROBO, which is that ETF that Chris, my CEO, was speaking about. And that looks at robotics, automation, and artificial intelligence. So the whole idea is, it's a disruptor. So what are we going to have in the future? And how do I also invest in that? And that's the idea of something like Robo, is it's looking at stocks that generate revenue from this megatrend of robotics, automation, and artificial intelligence. So robotics and automation has been around for about 50, 60 years. You know, we've seen it in manufacturing, where Ford can produce a vehicle every 10 seconds. Or you've got a company like Porsche, who have decided they don't want to create automated processing lines, but what they want to do is they want to use robotics and automation to still have but manual workforce, but help them. So they have exoskeletons on them to allow their workers who are getting older to lift heavier things and put heavy, like, all those things in place. But it's not in certain countries. For example, in South Korea, there's about 1,000 robots per 10,000 employee workers. You know, so you've got a lot of robots. In China, it's about 200 robots per 10,000 employees. So there's still a lot of growth to move in the emerging markets around the use of robotics. But then you move outside of the industrial space and manufacturing space. What about in consumer? What about in healthcare? So, you know, I'd be interested to know about how many of the listeners here would actually have a robotic vacuum cleaner. And, you know, so in the Robo ETF, we've got an exposure to a company called iRobot, and they produce the Roomba. And the Roomba is one of the biggest manufacturers of robotic vacuum cleaners. Now, that is just an evolution. But what that's done is they've taken the different aspects of technology that has been developed in the automotive space, sensing software that's developed in for cars, utilize it in a little vacuum cleaner, and they're selling that for about $1,000, and you can have that. But it's also got artificial intelligence software where the robotic vacuum cleaner, when you set it off, and you can do it via an app, and it goes directly to the messiest spot because it knows that, you know, that's a spot that I need to clean first, and then I will map out my room and clean the room. You know, so it's things like that in this mega trend that we're really, you know, it's just growing and it's continually going to increase. But how as an investor do I get exposure to that? You know, in the ETF that we have, the index we track is the Robo Global Index. And that's got over 90 names of companies that generate 25% or more revenue from this mega trend of robotics, automation, and artificial intelligence. And it's companies that as an investor, I don't know enough about. I'm not going to be on top of, and I don't know, should I invest in, you know, John Deere? What did John Deere? I didn't realize John Deere was a sort of tech company.
Yeah, you think they're just a tractor company, but it's exactly. Amazing to see that they're world leaders in artificial intelligence. Who would have thought?
They're using sensing software to be able to map out the different areas of the crops and the water density so that they can efficiently disperse water. And then on the healthcare side, you know, robotics and automation and AI really is only just grafted the surface. So, you know, we're not even going deep down in healthcare and we're seeing massive benefits. So Intuitive Surgical is a US company. They produce what's called the Da Vinci machine. And I would like everyone to actually go onto YouTube and, you know, put Da Vinci machine in and actually search the machine. And they've got really some really interesting videos. They've got a video of this machine which can be, you know, operated by a doctor from the next room or from across the world. And it can make, you know, minute precision surgery, you know, mid-body surgery. And it can literally, there's a video on there which shows it peeling a grape and then stitching the grape back together. Robo actually forms part of what we call the future present range. So in that range, we've got a global tech ETF, technology ETF. So the ticker is tech, T-E-C-H. And that is just your develop current established technology companies. So the Googles, the Apples, the Facebooks of the world. And then that's our present. And then we talk about the future. And the future is robo. So robotics, automation, artificial intelligence. Can't get that exposure. And the whole idea is I'm not buying individual stocks. I'm buying a theme. And the theme is that I know that this will be a disruptive theme. It will be a theme that will continue to grow. And that is what I would like. Alongside that, we've got a battery and technology and lithium mining ETF. So again, talking about renewable energy and, you know, electric storage and electric vehicles, you know, so that ticker is ACDC. So, and then you're talking about healthcare. So biotechnology, that is the future for healthcare. Mm-hmm. And so we launched an ETF last year around biotech.
Because in Australia, you could buy a CSL or Cochlear, but they're tiny compared to...
Compared to what is globally, you know, there's a stock in our biotech ETF. So the ETF, the ticker is CURE, C-U-R-E. But there's a stock in the index, and it's just U.S. biotech stocks. The top 120 stocks by size in the U.S. And there's a stock in there which has a largest market cap size of about $120 billion. Now, that's larger than CBA. But we here in Australia wouldn't know that. You know, investors generally have a home bias. You know, we like to invest in the domestic economy. We like to invest in our own market. But that sometimes could be a negative for our portfolio because we're very limited in what we have, as you said, Cochlear and CSL. So what I would suggest to investors is diversify. Look outside of the Australian market. You know, look at the ETFs that can help benefit your portfolio. And if you still want to take the domestic stock exposure, you can do that. But it complements what you're doing by buying the theme of what you really want. You really want biotech. You know, you're not trying to buy individual stock risk. You're buying a thematic. You're buying a sector.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I think that's one of the exciting things, isn't it? That, you know, in the past, you'd be trying to get a diversified portfolio.
Yeah.
And you'd buy, you know, some of the banks, some of BHP, some of Rio. That's your traditional Australian style of investing, bit of Telstra and so forth. Yep. But it's not real diversification. But now it's, your portfolio can encompass so many more different areas and so many different industries in the world.
Or I guess even, so you've got thematics like robo or battery tech and AC/DC, okay, that's that, or sectors, but then even regions. So, you know, we talk about European markets. Europe makes up more than 20% of global markets. But how many investors here in Australia would consider buying Europe as a region? And, you know, Europe has a lot of value. It's got a lot of potential. And, you know, it's quite a stable economy. Yes, fine, we've got Brexit and a lot of that's happening. But Europe specifically, core Europe, Germany, you know, there's a lot of positives in there. But would I take Europe as an exposure? But then you look at emerging markets. So in the recent years, we've had a few emerging market ETFs launched by competitors. We've had a few Chinese equity ETFs launched. And one in particular example would be VanEck. It's one of our competitors, has launched a new China ETF. So the ticker is CNU. And that's looking at, you know, retail, tech, you know, it's looking at, you know, the next evolution of Chinese companies and that sort of that big trend. So that's a great example to say, well, I can take broad, you know, emerging market exposure via ETF or an unlisted managed fund, mutual fund, and then I can complement it with this specific ETF. And that was one of the reasons. So we launched India Equity ETF. We're the first provider to do that here in Australia. So it's the first listed India equity exposure, and the ticker is NDIA. Now, that is just a pure market exposure. So it's just tracking the 50 largest companies in India.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying, we're just going to give you the market. You know, we believe the market, India, it's a growing economy, you know, forecasted 7.5% growth for next year, 7.7% growth for 2021. You know, big reforms have been put into place. It's structurally working. It's structurally building consumption. You know, it's
very young population.
A median population of India is 28 currently. By 2030, the median age will be 32. So 75% of the workforce is currently under 30.
And a very dynamic. Very dynamic and well-educated.
Well-educated. They adopt technology, you know, in big swathes. And so this is going to be an area where you say, okay, well, how do I get exposure to that?
Some of the listeners that we have, some are older and have got self-managed super funds or are about to retire. Some are very young people as well, and they want to gain exposure. So what's the advantage to the young person, for example, who's just starting out to getting into these sectors? And what's the advantage to the older people that have got their self-managed super funds?
Well, I think, you know, for anyone, they've got to assess what their risk profile is, and that whether you're young or old, your risk profile may end up being the same. You know, who knows? So they've got to assess what their risk profile is, you know, and how diversified is their portfolio, and they've got to look at that. You know, so they've got to really understand what they're wanting to achieve. That's the key goal there, you know. And so I think for a young investor, the ETFs provide a really easy, low-cost solution, because within a few ETFs, you can have a really diversified portfolio. And that's really useful for someone that doesn't have as much funds available to them to invest. ETFs also have options available for them, you know. So you've got products that provide yield. So they're not always about, you know, we've talked a lot about robo, we've talked a lot about, you know, India or China, etc. So really growth stories, but you know, you can be very defensive as well.
And so yield is income, isn't it?
Yield is income, exactly. But you know, Australians love income. They love dividends. They love their franking credits. But do I need to just focus on Australia for income? Can I look outside of that? Now, we've got a US equity income product, and the ticker is ZYUS, the code. And the yield on that to the end of June, just on the index, was 5%. And I think that's the key point there, is that's what ETFs are offering for any investor. So you've got products that are available that are suitable for those that, you know, low-cost building blocks for the really early investors that just want to build something, and then they can take a particular exposure into, you know, something of interest to them, like robotics and automation. Or, you know, I was talking with a friend on the weekend about, you know, she wanted to be quite ethical in her investing, and we've got ethical ETFs available on the market now as well. So she can do that. So she can be building blocks and then take some ethical ETFs. But then as they build up their portfolio, they can then start to be a bit, you know, specific and targeted and tactical, as we would say.
Can I just add something to what we were talking about before, and that's about John Deere and their artificial intelligence, that what they can actually do to individual seeds when the tractor is going around and planting the seeds. Can you tell us a bit about that, please?
Yeah, so I guess what it was trying to do is, so it would take the tractor. The tractor, firstly, is automated, so there's no driver in there. It's already mapped out the crop, so it knows the lines that it has to go. But what it's doing is it's actually going through using facial recognition technology on seeds. So
seeds are that unique, aren't they?
Seeds are that unique, exactly. So when you think about our fingerprints, they're all unique. And even a seed is unique. It's got its own fingerprint, essentially. So it's using facial recognition technology, and it's going through and it's mapping out and saying, okay, these seeds require more water, these seeds require less water. They're at the different stages of growth. And then it's dispersing the water accordingly. And I think that's what we forget is, you know, robotics and artificial intelligence and automation, we're at this precipice. There's this tipping point where you're just going to see this big evolution, but it's not going to be in industries that we previously have thought of. You know, we talked about the robot vacuum cleaners, the John Deere's of the world. So John Deere is buying more sensing companies and, you know, artificial intelligence companies and data analytics companies, and it's buying actual tractor companies. So would you classify John Deere as a tractor company, or would you classify John Deere as a tech company? So it's interesting to see, but I, as an investor here in Australia, would have no idea about that. And that's why I buy into those sorts of ideas, you know, the thematic ETFs, where I know the theme will cover that in some way, shape, or form.
Okay, forgetting about ETFs, but if you were to buy stocks, and it's about diversification, and we all know how important diversification is, but to be mathematically diversified, you need 30 stocks in your portfolio. How does that work?
So I think it's the mathematical theory that if you had 5 stocks, you're not diversified. If you had 10 stocks, you're not diversified. Especially in Australia, you're not diversified, because when we look at an Australian basic investment portfolio, everyone goes for the big 10, you know, your big 4 banks or your Telstras, your BHPs, your Rios, your Wesfarma, your Woolworths. Are you really diversified? You know, you don't have any technology exposure within that. You don't have any real consumer discretionary exposure within that. You know, you don't have any regional exposure within that. But that's just on shares. You know, we just talked about equities just in terms of your diversification. You haven't even looked at, you know, different asset classes. You know, should you be buying fixed income? You know, should you be buying commodities? You know, across equities, you need to have more than just 5 or 10. You can't be concentrated, and you need to build out the portfolio. So the ETFs solve that purpose. You know, they give you an ability to buy one. So one unit in a ASX 200 ETF gives you exposure to the 200 largest stocks on the Australian Stock Exchange. One unit of that ETF. So all of a sudden, I'm diversified. but then I need to diversify further. So portfolio diversification. So in your investment portfolio, you shouldn't just be diversified across, you know, your, what I would say is just equities or shares. You need to look at other asset classes and really build out a properly diversified portfolio so that you can ride out through the ups and the downs. You know, when you talk to a financial planner, a lot of them don't talk about how much they're going to give you in return, you know, what they can achieve. A lot of the time they talk to you about protecting your investment. And that's the whole idea about diversification. So diversify a bulk of your portfolio, you know, really make sure that it's safe. You're safeguarding your nest egg and you're growing it slowly. And then if you want to take bets, take your bets, but do it with a smaller allocation that if you're happy to lose, is what I say. You know, your friends would ask, or people ask, you know, should I take this? Should I take that? Well, there's a risk in everything. And, you know, taking a particular risk, you need to have a strong base first. And if you can take that risk, then you should. Then that's entirely up to you.
Because high risk means high returns.
High risk means high returns. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, but an example, we've got a palladium ETF. Now, it's the best performing ETF across all 200 products on the Australian Stock Exchange.
Yeah, and who even knows what palladium is?
Yeah. So I was having to explain this to someone the other day. And, you know, palladium is essentially a precious metal. It's short in supply. You know, it's only mined in South Africa. And so there's limited supply. There's high demand for it, especially as emission standards for cars, for petrol vehicles around the world increase.
How is palladium used in a car?
So it's used in the catalytic converters. So basically the conversion of the petrol into, you know, a more cleaner, you know, output. The amount of platinum used in one vehicle is about $200. So very small. But when you talk about how many vehicles are being produced for countries like China, India now, the US, Europe, you're seeing much more, many more petrol vehicles being produced. So there's an increased demand in palladium.
So we've got a listener question. This is from Barry Cunningham. I'll be retiring in 3 years' time, and I'm interested to know more about investment options to keep my wife and I funded for at least 30 long and happy years. I'll be going to a financial advisor, but I want to know more about the products they recommend. I'm not a professional investor, but I don't want to be blindly taking advice without having a certain level of knowledge myself. How can I start to know what I need to know? Thanks for the question, Barry.
So, Barry, I think first thing is the Australian government's got a very good website in moneysmart.gov.au. And I think first point is go there. Go there because it actually explains what a managed fund is. It explains what an exchange-traded fund is. It explains what a LIC, listed investment company, is, or listed investment trust. You know, really use that source first to give you some basic knowledge. Also, in terms of choosing your financial planner, you know, you can search your financial planner on that particular website, and that actually gives you the history of the financial planner. And so you can see, you know, have them been caught up with any issues, or, you know, et cetera. So I would suggest that's the first point of call. The other side of it is go to, you know, do Dr. Google, you know, literally go to some, you know, so if your financial planner comes to you, so you've done that, you've gone to, you know, the government website, you've got some basic knowledge around what a managed fund is, what an exchange traded fund is, do your own research. You know, each of the fund managers in Australia, or majority of them anyway, you know, especially the larger ones, have a lot of information on their website, as I said before.
So, Kanish, you've got a two-year-old son, haven't you?
I do, yes.
At what age are you going to start teaching investing?
Well,
how young can you start?
Yeah, it's funny. I think, you know, from the age of probably five, I can probably start talking to him about saving. And the age of probably sort of six or seven, I think probably seven, when you can start to say they start to want something, you can start to sort of talk to them about, well, if you want this, you can give me something, and you can try to invest it, to try and build to get that. So saving and investment go hand in hand. So I would probably start from about the age of five or six, probably, yeah.
So how old do you think he'll be before he gets his first ETF?
I think he'll probably be younger than that, because I've probably bought it for him already.
Which one have you got for him?
So for him, I've actually just got basically a collection of ETFs. So it's a very small basic portfolio of five or six ETFs. Mm-hmm. So things like, you know, physical gold. So the GLD ETF, he can be a little bit more risky. He's got a longer term horizon.
A very long term horizon.
Yeah, so things like NDIA and so forth. You know, the growth plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not looking for income at the moment. He's looking for growth.
Yeah.
So we can be a bit riskier. Mm-hmm. With some of his investments.
His risk profile is very high, according to his very father.
Exactly, according to his father.
And a very aggressive two-year-old.
Yeah, very aggressive two-year-old. Yeah.
Okay, so tell us a bit about ETF Securities, about where we can get in touch with you, and what resources you've got for the listeners. And
yeah, definitely. So, you know, we talked about ETFs in the market. They've been around for about 16 years, but ETF Securities has been around for pretty much 16 of those years. We're the second oldest provider in Australia.
Is it an Australian company or
Australian-owned company? Mm-hmm. Started by a man called Graham Tuckwell. So he's the founder and still the owner of ETF Securities. And he's actually quite a big philanthropist. You know, he's got a foundation with the Australian National University in Canberra. And really for us as ETF Securities, as I said before, we want to provide the intelligent alternative. And I guess the point around that is we're wanting to be a partner for investors. So we want to make sure investors have everything at their fingertips and all the information to make the best decision for them. So we do a lot of content. We do a monthly newsletter, which has education, it has market news, it has research and product news. And so that's probably a key thing there. So for investors that want to be on our newsletter, they can go to etfsecurities.com.au. They can subscribe. And as I would say also is go to the website and have a look under the resources section. There's a lot of really useful information. And if you go to the contacts page, you can actually see the numbers there. Feel free to call us. You know, we've got a team, just in the sales team alone, we've got six people, happily to take anyone's call during, you know, market hours. So any questions around ETFs, any questions around trading of ETFs, what should I do? Should I not do this? We'll happily try and help you out.
So 16 years, you must have been pioneers in the field in Australia.
The world's first physically backed gold product. So around the world, there was never a gold product that gave you physical exposure. So we, Graham Tuckwell, you know, launched that here in Australia, and that product was then replicated over in the US and the UK.
Yeah, I've got friends who get excited about gold because one friend has bought something where you can actually get the gold, I think, or...
Yeah, so with our product, you can actually redeem for the metal if you would like.
Wow, no if one you want does. Your own bullion.
Yeah, yeah, if people want to, they can, but there are costs associated with that.
Yeah, yeah.
But because we physically back our product. So the code is G-O-L-D. It's the world's first physically backed gold product. We have over $740 million worth of gold sitting in a vault attached to the investors for the unit holders. So the unit holders there...
Hang on, just say that. How much gold have you got sitting in a vault?
Over $700 million Australian dollars.
Where's this vault?
It's in London. So, you know, the custodian for that product is HSBC. So it sits in a vault with HSBC.
So if it's open-ended, does that mean you've got to keep on putting more gold into it?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, so, you know, we've seen, you know, big inflows recently into the product, and we keep buying more gold, and we'll happily continue to do that. And that's the thing. It's attached to the end investor. So the end unit holders, that is their gold. We can't touch it as ETF securities. All we ETF securities are doing, providing a vehicle for the investor to invest in. So doomsday scenario, things like that, they've still got their gold sitting in the vault.
So you can go over to London and pick it up.
If they would like, yeah, exactly.
Kanish, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure talking to you there today.
No, thank you so much.
Shares for Beginners is for information and educational purposes only. It isn't financial advice, and you shouldn't buy or sell any shares based on what you've heard here. Any opinion or commentary is the view of the speaker only, not Shares for Beginners. This podcast doesn't replace professional advice regarding your personal financial needs, circumstances, or current situation. And I'd also like to say a big thank you to Christopher Soulos of Garlic Breath Studios for all the fantastic help with the music production.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.